What's up, ladies and gentlemen? Parsa here with Show ATL. It has been a minute. It has been a minute since we've put out an episode. And sorry to keep you all waiting. Happy New Year. Happy 2020. Happy New Decade. And everything that goes with that. The world we live in has proven to be tumultuous and interesting right out the gate in 2020. And hey, we're here for it. I have been working on a project which has come to fruition called Free Market Gallery. We're located at 86 Pryor Street in historic underground Atlanta. I'm very proud of what the team has built with the gallery there. Got a few shows coming up in the coming months. February 21st. We have a show opening called Lovers Only. This is a Friday evening, free, 7 to 11 p.m. And yeah, got some shows coming up after that. A lot of exciting things in the works. I had a wonderful New Year. Got out of town a little bit. Got to clear the old noggin out with a little bit of R&R, and then jumped right back into the new year with a lot of exciting projects in the works, which is why the podcast has been on hold for a few months. But happy to be back with some new episodes in the works. Very excited about this one. Not going to delay much longer on the intro and jump right into it. My guest today is brilliant Atlanta street artist Chris Veal. You can find him on Instagram at CAVeal. That's CAVEAL. Chris also happens to be my next door neighbor. and we've been trying to get him in the studio to record this episode for a while now. And we've been having a hard time scheduling because both he and I are very busy with projects and with work. But we finally got one on the calendar and very excited to have Chris make the 30-foot journey across from his place over to mine to sit down and record this great episode. Chris Veal, very prolific Atlanta street artist and muralist. He is most famous from the, I guess, non-art community for his pop-style street murals with this satire undertone that is very critical of a lot of Atlanta-relevant topics, namely gentrification of our neighborhood here, our neighborhood of Old Fourth Ward and Ponce Highlands. His mural on Ponce, I Miss Buckhead, was one of the major turning moments for his street art career in Atlanta. And he has since found tremendous success in commission work, both private and public, as well as trying to put together his solo show for a gallery exhibition. Chris moved here from Milledgeville in 1999 and has made Atlanta his home and his place of work and his canvas ever since, pretty much 2003 onwards. We talk a lot about how Chris moves around between style to style, doesn't like to stick to one style in particular. Talk about how his work has evolved. Talk about organizations that are doing right by the Atlanta community and bringing more street art to Atlanta. Things like Outer Space Project, put on by ABV, and Forward Warrior, put on by Peter Ferrari, formerly a Facet Gallery, and prolific street artist and Atlanta art contributor himself. Yeah, we talk about a lot. Chris is a great guy. Really happy to have him on the show. Looking forward to getting to know my neighbor more now that we've had this conversation together and got to pick his brain about his work and his life and his career in Atlanta. So without any further ado and without me rambling on and on anymore, I present to you this first podcast of 2020 with the talented and all-around great guy, Chris Veal.
At any given moment, we know what the world is feeling.
Are you wearing pajama pants to school? Why, yes, I am.
I was, in a way, elevating him. I was celebrating him.
We wanted to build a beer pong table.
No, it's the Show ATL podcast.
Ba, 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 ba. Ba, 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 ba.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Show ATL podcast, the podcast where we seek to find and highlight Atlanta creatives and creators and people who are doing great things in our great city every day. Today, my guest is the one and only Chris Veal. If you don't know of Chris personally, or if you can't put a face to a name, I'm sure you can put some artwork to the name because Chris has been producing art in the Atlanta scene, both on walls and on canvases and in buildings and all around town for quite a while now. So welcome to the show, Chris.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad we were finally able to get up and do this. We've been talking about it for a bit, and you know, you're two doors down. So.
It's kind of funny that of all of the people who I've been trying to get on the show, and we've been trying to coordinate timelines, one of the longest timelines to date of nailing it down has been the literal closest person to me. Like you mentioned, you live two doors on the same building away from me. So
probably 30 feet away from me, but schedules. Yeah.
But hey, I mean, I've been a little bit busy the last few months opening a art business, Free Market Gallery, and you are busy pretty much all the time. I read somewhere as I was kind of getting ready for our interview today that you consider yourself somewhat of a workaholic.
Oh yeah, definitely.
I mean, you're pretty prolific. You've been in town for a while, which I don't stay on one consistent timeline, so I'm probably going to bounce around a little bit. I'd like to get at the backstory as well, but just wanted to kind of touch up on the workaholic perspective. You do a lot of work around town, whether it's private commissions or public murals, or collaborations with fine artists like Jeremy Brown, for example, the piece you have up in our gallery. How much of your week, generally, in terms of hours, would you say you are creating work?
Probably 60 to 80 hours of my week is devoted to art in some way or the other.
And that is, and you have a day job outside of artwork as well, correct?
I do, but it's art related as well. So it's okay. It's just pretty much takes up all my time is art.
So how much of that is working on large scale murals? If you
Large scale murals, probably I'll do maybe two or three a month. I don't post them all, but I do. And some months are slower than others. Like in the fall, my work is, I don't get much rest in the fall. It's just busy, busy, busy.
Right.
This time of year, I'll do maybe one to two a month.
Okay. So
it slows down in the winter, and then it starts picking up in spring and summer, and then through fall, it gets really busy.
Is that just a weather and timing thing, or is that just the demand or availability of wall space and customers or whatever?
I really have no idea. It started, when I first started out, it seemed like spring was always the busy, busy time of year. And then, you know, in the past like 4 years, I think fall is just, for some reason, it's got really busy. It might be because I'm doing stuff for more companies. And maybe they're like, you know, trying to spend their last money for the year or something. I don't know. But
Right. Yeah,
fall has definitely gotten a lot busier for me than, you know, when I first started.
Right, right. How much of the work that you do is just stuff that you create on your own volition versus commission-based or at request? I imagine a larger proportion of it now is commission-based than at request, as the more notoriety and fame you've gained in the Atlanta scene. But I imagine you still do work for yourself as well.
Yeah, I do. It's definitely not as much as I'd like, but you know, I try to make time to paint for myself when I can. Like the newest piece, the Yodo piece, that was just for fun, you know. But it's normally like every like one out of four, maybe one out of five is just something that I get to do for myself.
Okay.
And then the rest are just commissions mostly.
So it seems like at least once a month or once every other month you're getting to do a personal mural project in there.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's cool.
About that.
That's cool. I have to talk about the one you just mentioned, which is your most recent mural that's blown up in terms of press, both on social media as well as some other press around Atlanta, which is the Baby Yoda mural you have under the Freedom Parkway Bridge on the east side. Beltline Trail.
Yeah.
Which is, it's on the backside of the wall of the bridge, right? So if you're walking by the skate park, you're not going to see it unless you venture behind the wall. But it's a pretty sizable piece. What, about 30 feet long?
Maybe about 20.
Okay.
I don't think it's quite 30, yeah.
But it is a, for people who are currently living under a rock or completely tuned out, it's a representation of the Baby Yoda character from the Mandalorian show, which is part of the Star Wars series, which has been blowing up on social media and the internet. But you did that with another artist, correct?
Yeah, I did it with my friend Nelson, paints nails. When he's in town from LA, we always try to make time to do some kind of piece together. He's a lot of fun to paint with. He's in LA currently, but when he gets back, we've been talking about doing another wall together. And as soon as he comes back, but the wall is really funny because of New Year's Day, I was like, oh, I got a free day, I can just kind of do whatever I want. So I went and bought the paint, and then I called him up and I was like, hey, I want to do this Baby Yoda, and he was like, I'm actually already out painting it right now, and it was the day before.
That's awesome.
And I was like, okay, cool. Well, I guess we'll both just paint him. So that's why there's two on the wall. So because we had both already got the paint and the idea. So
that's pretty pretty serendipitous and pretty fantastic timing that worked out.
Yeah, it worked out. It's a lot of fun. It's a really fun character to paint, and people seemed to enjoy it. Kind of went crazy.
Why'd you pick Baby Yoda?
I just thought it'd be fun to paint. I'm a big fan of the show. And I just really wanted to paint something that's actually, like, you know, fun for me and just all that day. So I was like, yeah, just kind of came up with the idea, hit Nels up. It's like, yeah, let's go do it.
And nice.
Yeah, he was already out painting it. So we started painting. I started painting on New Year's Day, maybe about 10 in the morning. Then he got there a little bit later because he painted the day before. So, yeah, he got there maybe at like 1 or 2. And wrapped up around 5.
So that was just a one-day project.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. Did you expect the reaction to it that it got? That it got picked up in the press and
no,
social
definitely
media?
Not. Yeah, I didn't expect that kind of reaction. I figured it would, you know, people would like it and it'd get a lot of, you know, hits and whatnot, but I didn't expect to, like, be on the news or anything for that
right.
one. Especially because it's kind of tucked away. I was like, people probably won't even see it. And then, you know, whenever, like, news outlets get a hold of stuff, you know, as soon as one does, then they all want the same story. So,
right.
Yeah, it kind of snowballed and people, you know, call in every day.
right. That wall where it is under the bridge, on the backside of the bridge. So you hadn't chosen that location, right? Because Nels had already started painting there, right?
Yeah.
But how do you feel about where it ended up? Would you have chosen that location if you had, like, you know, your pick, Greenfield Wall?
Yeah, I definitely, you know, if I had the pick of any wall in Atlanta, it wouldn't be that one just because the turnover rates there is really fast. But because it's so close to home,
right?
You know, I can walk there in 5 minutes. And I was like, yeah, it's okay. And I definitely would have preferred to put it on the front side just to get a little more traffic, but it probably wouldn't last as long there because everybody tries to hit the front wall. But yeah, it's I'm happy with it.
I think it turned out great. I walked by it the other day, being as close as we are to it. You brought up an interesting point about that front wall getting tagged over. What is the etiquette amongst more tenured, high-producing street artists like yourself when it comes to painting over or choosing a wall that might have an existing piece of artwork on it? Is there kind of a general rule of thumb that you live by or that the industry kind of goes by in terms of setting expectations for that kind of stuff? Or is it really still a total free-for-all?
I can't speak for everyone. I just kind of have my own personal things. I try not to, like, tag over anything or paint over anything unless I can do something better. Or if it's, you know, dust already. Now, a lot of people don't follow that, especially with places like that and Krog, you know, nowadays. You know, I've been painting that wall probably 16 years, maybe.
Wow.
And just since the Beltline's been built, you know, I used to be able to paint there and things would last, you know, months. But now it's the turnover rate is extremely quick. You know, I've already fixed it twice since it's been up, since New Year's. So.
Wow. So how proactive are you when the piece is up about maintaining it? Are you, you know, are you, do you check on it weekly, daily, monthly?
I don't check on generally, like, somebody will send me a picture pretty quick, and they're like, oh, look what happened, and I'm like, okay, you know, I'll go fix it. But I really try to stay on top of fixing my walls.
Right.
If it's, you know, a spot like that, or if it's, you know, one of my commission walls, I really try to put a lot of work and keep things looking the way I want them to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I will, you know, I was out there with a headlamp, you know, after work trying to fix it, you know, I'll work really hard at trying to, you know, fix everything as fast as I can and just let people know, like, if you paint on my work, it's not going to last. Like, I'm going to paint over it and fix it.
Yeah. I mean, it's smart. And I think it maintains this brand that you've built over all of these years of being, yeah, you know, such a high producing and well-known Atlanta street artist. There's no shortage of street art in Atlanta. My question around that, which I've always wondered, is how is the city itself getting better with regards to allowing street art to go on and to stay up? I imagine there is a line between just vandalism, graffiti, and actual street art that is more clear to the artist than it is to, right, the local politician.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
If I'm wearing my local politician hat just because I don't appreciate a certain style of street art, doesn't mean that I necessarily have the right or the standing to take it down. Right? Has the city improved since you've been here about street art? And I mean, how do you see that changing since, you know, you started working out in Atlanta?
Yeah, when I first started painting walls and stuff, I would have cops like pull over and be like, you know, what are you doing? Like, I got permission. And they were like, you know, permission from who? It's like the building owner, you know. So I had to deal with that a lot. But lately, you know, they've kind of backed off. As far as now, you know, they see people painting a mural and they're like, oh, they're painting a mural, you know, cops just drive by or whatever. There are a few politicians in Atlanta that's, I don't know if they have a vendetta or they just, you know, they want to change something. So a couple of years ago, they tried to pass some like reform to where you have to get permission for anything you paint a scene from, you know, public space.
Mm.
But they, there was a huge uproar and a lawsuit against the city, so they backed off of that. But lately, things have been pretty good. The city seemed to kind of let things be. And they haven't really pursued me or anybody that I know as far as, you know, taking down their work or anything like that. So I think they're getting a lot better at it because Atlanta's really blown up, and I think they kind of see the value in it as far as what it can bring to the city and, you know, the people and the community and stuff. So I think they... I think they appreciate it a lot more than they did, you know, say a few years ago.
Right. Right. Which is smart, I think, on their part, just because I think they are finally coming around to the idea that street art can enhance the value of public spaces, of cities, can even put cities on the map. You think of places like Miami with Wynwood Walls, the Miami Art District,
yeah, for sure.
You know, or large cities like Valparaiso, Chile, that are just covered in street art. There are certain, styles of street art that have now become notorious and define a certain area. Like I can consider some early Banksy work, right? I think the public in general now is coming around to this idea that street art is not vandalism, that it enhances communities and cities and things like that. And I'm thankful for the existence of things like Outer Space Project and Forward Warrior, which have brought together large groups of Atlanta street artists to put together either a series of individual murals or one large mural along a wall, like with Forward Warrior. I know this year you participated in Forward Warrior. How long have you been doing that project with Peter?
I've done it 2, maybe 3 times now. Yeah, that's a great project. I really enjoy painting on that wall, and it's just having everyone come out that weekend. It's a lot of fun. And I think, you know, what they're doing with it is really great. Same for Outer Space Project. Outer Space Project's awesome, and I love that, you know, they have a lot of local artists. There's always as many local artists as there is out of towners, which I think is great for, you know, local people getting their start, getting the foot in the door, doing murals, and getting to do cool projects like that. It really helps them out.
And it's great. You mentioned out-of-towners. A lot of large international names are now starting to come in for this project and this week long mural installation.
Yeah, definitely seen. I mean, Philippe Pantone, Nichos, Michael Reeder, you know, Greg and everybody at ABV has put a lot into it and, you know, used their connections and brought a lot of really amazing artists. And Atlanta's super lucky to, you know, get to see these guys come here once a year and create awesome work. And it's just, you know, there's a lot of cities don't really have, you know, that big, you know, of an outlet for a festival or something like that. And to have that huge names come to the city is just, it's really awesome. And I'm really thankful to be in Atlanta and get to see it.
I think people are appreciating it more too, from a public perspective. I imagine it hasn't always been that way, but you've been here since 1999.
Yeah,
you're from Milledgeville.
Yep,
which is in Georgia. For anyone who's not familiar with Georgia, but you moved to Atlanta in '99. Tell me about, well, two things. A, why Atlanta? Why'd you move? And why'd you move when you did? And the second part is, how has Atlanta and your work in relation to it changed since you moved here in 99?
Well, I moved here. Milledgeville is a very small town. There's a couple of colleges. You know, it's very fraternity-based. There's not a lot to do as far as, you know, especially in the art world, there's not a lot to do. And I always just felt like I needed to, you know, get to a major city or get somewhere where I could make art and do different things. And at that point, I didn't even want to be a street artist. I was just like, I want to be an artist. You know, I want to make art for a living. And I came here like pretty much as soon as I could. I was 17. I told my mom, I was like, hey, I'm moving to Atlanta. And she was just like, oh, okay, whatever. And then I was like, okay. And I came up here with like $200 in my pocket and moved in with a friend of a friend and, you know, just slept on her couch until I could get a job and, you know, make enough money to survive here.
So what did you start doing when you came to town? Did you have a plan? Were you already pursuing art as a career when you moved here? Or did that start after the fact?
It started after the fact. I always kind of had it in my head that I wanted to do art. But when I first got up here, you know, I was 17. I just wanted to party and ride bikes and, you know, pretty much just wild out, you know. So I did that for a few years, and then I was just like, I got to do something with myself. You know, I can't just party for, you know, the rest of my life. So I went to school for graphic design. Somebody told me, you could be a graphic designer. I was like, you like to draw? I'm like, okay, cool. And at the time, I didn't even know what graphic design was. I was just like, yeah, sign me up. So I went to school at AIU in Buckhead and, you know, didn't even realize what I was getting myself into. I was just like, oh, man, this is kind of crazy. You know, come out of school like owing all this money,
right?
And it was, you know, it was a good experience. I didn't feel like I learned that much, but you know, it did teach me that I don't want to stare at computers. And I was like, God, this is not for me. So at the time, I was, you know, painting graffiti with friends and stuff, and then I was like, yeah, I'll just do this. So I just started. Right. I just started scouring Craigslist and stuff, looking for work. And at the time, I really didn't have any business taking on jobs. I was just like, I would take whatever. It's like,
right.
It's like, yeah, yeah. $300 to do this massive wall. Like, yeah, cool.
So there was still a demand for, when you started, there was a demand for murals even then, it seems.
Yeah.
Much smaller, probably.
Yeah, definitely not the level that it is now. And, you know, I was painting like dance studios and smoke shops and, you know, random people's bedrooms, whatever. You know, my daughter really likes, you know, cupcakes. Yeah. Can you paint a cupcake on the wall? I'm like, yeah, okay. So I was painting pretty much wherever I could to try to get my name out there and to make some money for, you know, pay my bills and stuff. So I would pretty much take on whatever. And a lot of the jobs I even lost money on. It's just like, oh, yeah, you know, pays, you know, $500, but it's, you know, it's $300 in paint, you know, $100 in travel and food, and after that I ended up making, like, you know, barely anything,
but right.
Right. It was fun. I think it helped out as far as getting my name out, just taking, you know, getting content to show people, like, I can do this, I can do that.
Did you have a distinct drawing style when you started, like before any of the work came in? Did you already have sort of a signature style that was your own that you were working on, or was that something that came through the work?
At the time, it was more like just, you know, I could do characters, but they were more like cartoony. And I would do, You know, I could do lettering for graffiti. I always enjoyed doing that. So I would do a lot of that for people. And then, like, if they wanted to add a character, you know, I could, you know, add that onto the wall. And,
yeah.
And I didn't have a distinct style. It's just like just painting kind of whatever I could. But it wasn't years later I started working on different styles and try to take on different things and really like learning. So
I've, yeah, you, there were a few notable pieces around town that take on this era of satire and social commentary that I'm gonna dive into, not quite yet. But there are several pieces that have kind of become associated with you, Chris Veal, as an artist, which take on more of this almost comic book style, cartoony element. One of the more famous ones was the piece on Ponce, right across what is now the Hotel Claremont, before it was just the Claremont Lounge, right? That was the I Miss Buckhead piece.
Yeah.
And that was what it seemed like a husband, some guy in a suit, saying, "Honey, we're urban now." And the wife or girlfriend in a pantsuit, hair done up, you know, to the, you know, very, very overdressed, saying, "I miss Buckhead."
Yeah.
And obviously a take on the still growing gentrification of this neighborhood. Right. But you from there started doing a, I don't know if it was just, you know, several one-off pieces in that same style or series in that style. But, was that deliberate in terms of choosing a direction with your style, or was that just something you were experimenting with that stuck?
It was completely an experiment.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. I had no plan to do that style on the regular. I had done two others before. One kind of making fun of a local person here that I got in an argument with on Facebook. She
I want to hear about that.
I won't say her name, but I got in some stupid argument on Facebook with her, and she was just like, "I have 10,000 followers, 11,000 followers or something." So I went and painted a big portrait of her and put, "I have 11,000 followers" or something like that.
That's awesome.
And I did that one years back just as a joke. And then I did another one at a festival where I just painted a character, and, you know, a crying girl, and put, "We met on Tinder." So
That's really good.
I did those two, and then I didn't do any for a long time. I've always enjoyed pop art and pop style. Even in college, I used to, you know, mess around with it on computer, but I never really painted it. And then that wall on Ponce, local guy that runs a bunch of restaurant groups here in Atlanta was just like, "Hey, I got this building, keeps getting tagged. Can you just put something on it? And maybe it won't get tagged that much." And I was just like, "Yeah, that's cool." So he told me what wall, and, you know, just said, "Go over whenever you want." And I went over, you know, that weekend. And the original plan was I was going to do Ganesh, the, like, Indian god, you know.
Right.
And then, like, the day before, I was talking to someone at an art show, and I was just like, "Yeah, I wanted to do this, but I kind of got this other idea to do, like, some kind of pop, you know, style." And we started joking around with different sayings that they could be saying. And, you know, I went out, and I still... After I painted the characters first, and I still had no idea what they were going to say. And so I was just looking at it, and I'd ran out of paint. So I had to go to Home Depot to get some more paint. So while I was walking over, I just kind of was like, "Yeah, I started coming up with this, like, different Buckhead stuff." And I was just like, "Yeah," and started thinking about the area. And the owner of the wall actually suggested, he's like, "Yeah, if you want to put some commentary on it, and, you know, that's cool." And I was like, yeah, but I didn't really, wasn't sure if I wanted to or not. And then when I was walking back, I was like, "Yeah, that sounds pretty funny. I'll put it." And before I was even done writing it, somebody drove by, and I, like, heard them laughing in the car, and I was like, "Okay, maybe this is good." Yeah. I was like, maybe people will like it. I don't know. So I finished the piece, and I went home, and I went to sleep pretty early that night. And I woke up the next day, and my phone was just, like, going crazy. It's like, you know, pull up Instagram, and I had, like, 400 or 500 new followers. And I was like, "What the hell?" You know, I'd never seen, like, a jump like that before in any of my work. Normally, at the time, I was getting, you know, a couple of followers a week. And then, so So I was like, it's probably a glacier broken or something. Right. And then like all these people started calling me and it's just like, yeah, I saw the new piece, so funny. And I think like Creative Loafing and a couple of other people reached out to me and I was just like, oh man, this is, what do I do now? You know, I've
right.
done this piece and a couple other people are asking me, they're like, oh, what are you going to do next? And I was like, I have no idea.
Yeah. Yeah. Was that a big turning point in your Atlanta art career? Was that piece like the jumpstart to that series and
it really,
a lot of recognition with that?
Yeah, it really was. Before that, I wasn't getting, I think I'd had one other thing blow up that big, but I didn't sign it. And then it was just online. You know, I did a piece and it just went kind of crazy. But I got zero credit for it.
Right. Right.
Because everyone just started screenshotting it and sharing it, and I didn't have my name on it anywhere.
So that's actually an interesting question, quick tangent that I want to get on. All of your pieces now are tagged at CA Veal,
yeah.
which is your Instagram handle, CAVEAL.
Yeah.
Before the world of Instagram, how did your work get shared? How did you tag it?
MySpace.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, MySpace, Facebook. I was kind of late to the Instagram game too because I didn't have an iPhone.
Mm.
So I didn't really even know what it was until I'd seen pictures and stuff. And I was like, oh, I don't even, you know, it's not a new app or something. And
right.
then one of my buddies that have an iPhone, was just like, yeah, it's a cool app. You need to get it. And so as soon as it came out for Android, I picked it up. And that kind of helped out as far as spreading my work. But before that, yes, word of mouth, Facebook, MySpace, you know, stuff like that, art, random little art shows.
Right. Interesting. Right. That's, I've always been curious. There are, I mean, obviously every muralist and artist worth his salt is going to tag their work and sign their work. But yours is very distinct to me because it's so big and deliberately guiding everyone to your Instagram. It's just always at CA Veal, very prominent. You know who it is.
Yeah.
And it's very unique to your Instagram handle, which I don't see ubiquitously. Yeah, I don't see it on every style of street art or every prominent artist's like signature is only their Instagram handle, right?
Yeah.
Which I think is super smart on your end, but it also made me think about like, hey, how did Chris sign and tag work before the Instagram era, you know?
Yeah, before I would just like, you know, sign my name. Even now I don't. Sometimes I don't even sign walls. The wall memorial I didn't sign for like 2 years.
Yeah, yeah.
But before it was just, you know, I'd sign my name. Now I do try to put my handle on it. And I'm trying to, like, some people like put it like massive. I try not to do that because I think it kind of takes away from the work. But I do try to put it on a lot of my work. You know, it just helps to spread the word and, you know, so people can go and see more art and see what else I got going on.
Yeah, yeah.
Helps out.
Yeah, no, so, for sure. I mean, you have gained a lot of recognition from it and have become a big player in the Atlanta art scene for many years now. Going back to that piece on Ponce with We're Urban Now and I Miss Buckhead and the very pop Liechtenstein style of work that you've perpetuated since in a lot of other pieces, there is a huge air of social commentary to that if you are not aware of Atlanta's different neighborhoods and the series of projects that have been gentrifying our community for the better part of a decade now, the message would be lost on you. If you're coming from out of town, don't know anything about Atlanta, and you see that, I imagine it wouldn't be as powerful as someone who is an Atlanta local. The theme overall of the piece is a commentary on the more affluent communities like Buckhead and northern suburban communities of Atlanta moving into this community, Old Fourth Ward, you know, Reynolds Town, Inman Park, Ponce Highlands, right? You, before we started and turned the mics on, you were telling me that you've lived in a variety of places around town before you moved to Old Fourth Ward, Buckhead being one of them.
Yeah.
Right. So what is your take? Right. And this is just, you know, this is just Chris Veal's opinion. I have my own. I imagine many people in our community have their own opinions of what gentrification has done to our community. But what is your take of someone who has lived in a few different spots and has been working in art and the Atlanta scene for as long as you have on this wave of money coming into Old Fourth Ward and Reynoldstown and Grant Park and Ponce Highlands and the like?
Yeah, it's been crazy to see. I've been on Ralph McGill for, long, long time. When I first moved here, I did move to Buckhead, and I was not there very long. I was there for not quite even a year, and I was like, all right, this isn't for me. And that's when Buckhead was like party central. Mm. Like Buckhead used to be, all about their clubs and stuff. But my neighbors moved to 131 Ralph McGill, and then which is a little more closer to downtown from where we're at now. And I ended up moving down, and at the time I was sleeping on their balcony. Like I was paying like $100 to sleep on a balcony a month. And then I made the big jump to moving in the living room.
Nice.
I lived there for a while, and then I got enough, saved up enough to get my own apartment in the same place. So I've been in the Fourth Ward for a long time and definitely seen it change drastically. Even with the Beltline, I walked those railroad tracks when they were just railroad tracks.
Right.
And abandoned railroad tracks wasn't even in use. But, the Beltline came, money came, Pont City Market, all these big projects started popping up, economy starts doing better. People are not afraid to spend money, so they start buying up properties and that's going to happen. I don't really have a problem with things getting, if there's an abandoned building or whatnot, they want to buy that and put it to use, cool. It's definitely been really wild to see, though, as far as the, I used to be able to, go to bars here, and it was, really tight-knit, small. Now I go in and get weird looks for, going in and, t-shirt and jeans. after work and stuff, people look at me like I'm crazy. I'm like, I've been here a long time.
It's hard not to put on the hipster, arrogant hat, because I haven't been here as long as you, but I've been here 6 years, which is it's not a short amount of time. I was here before Pont City Market opened, and I used to come down to the Masquerade all the time when this was just railroad tracks before any of this happened, right?
Yeah, so that's a shame with that too. I love the Masquerade before.
It's not just the artwork itself. If you follow, your Instagram account, or if you know know Chris personally, you are a huge advocate for keeping the integrity of the community alive. And when the Masquerade, I think this was a couple of weeks ago, you posted something on your story of the Masquerade being redeveloped into whatever they're turning it into now, this dining.
Yeah,
retail
offices and stuff like that.
Right, and you're like, oh, this is building a better community for Atlanta. You are very vocal about how you feel, whether it's through your art or through your own personal brand and your social media. You don't shy away from lending your opinion to what is happening to your community.
Definitely not. With some stuff that the Masquerade is for a lot of people is. It's a hub of, music in Atlanta. And you can't stop the train of, stuff coming in and things changing. Like, it's going to happen. There's no way around it. But where's the line? Where do you say, okay, well, if all we have now is mixed use places and we don't have any more destinations like the Masquerade or, these other places, like awesome, cool places that's been there for, years and years and years, then what are we going to be left with?
Right.
It's not going to be, everyone's like, oh, that's such a cool area. At the end of the day, what are we going to be like? It's just going to be like a, the Beltline, like a sidewalk.
It's very sterile. It's becoming more sterilized. The more money comes in, the more it's just keeping everything safe, keeping everything, within the lines. There's no character to it anymore. It's all just, big development branded, whatever's kind of on trend. Whatever's going to sell the best, whatever's going to look the best on Instagram.
Yeah.
That's the way I've seen the trend go. I know plenty of people who consider me somewhat of a hater because I moved into this community. I knew what was coming.
Yeah.
It wasn't as big as it is now, but the Beltline was already paved when I moved here. again, you know, I mentioned Ponce wasn't open yet, but I knew exactly what was coming. I'm from Atlanta myself. So I've, you know, I spent middle school, high school, college going to the Masquerade as it used to be before the Beltline, before Old Fourth Ward Park, before Ponce City Market, and just hearing about what the Beltline, what was happening around the Beltline. I moved here with expectations of that character growing and perpetuating and becoming more like Atlanta, but it became less Atlanta.
Yeah.
You know, the character all went away with it. And to your point, I used to go to bars on the Beltline around where we are now and be able to have like relatively intimate conversations with my neighbors and with locals and with people who lived in the neighborhood. And now any given weekend night, you walk down the Beltline and everywhere is packed with people who, most of whom are not local to this neighborhood. Right. I mean, a good example I like to use is Lady Bird. When I moved here, granted, you've been here a bit longer than me, but when I moved here, I used to be able to go to Lady Bird and talk to, you know, relatively the same familiar faces at the bar, knew the bartender. It was like a casual night going to get a drink with a friend kind of thing.
Yeah.
And now it's a complete shit show.
Yeah, I don't even go there.
Exactly, I don't even go there anymore because it's just like
I walk by and I'm just like, oh man, that looks terrible.
right. You know, it's just a bunch of big sun hats and polos tucked into khaki shorts and boat shoes and Labrador retrievers.
It's funny. That's actually where they had the first. I think one or two Ford Warriors was actually there.
Yeah. That's where Facet was behind Lady Bird.
Yeah, and this was before Facet was even there. Right. Peter like built makeshift walls out there, and you know, invited, I think it was like 8 or maybe 10 artists to come out and, you know, paint them. So it's definitely it's weird to see that it went from that to, you know, what it is now.
Yeah. What's good about it? The whole wave of gentrification. What do you think is?
I mean, as improved as an artist. You know, I can sit there and hate it. But as from an artist or professional artist standpoint, it does, in a lot of cases, get me, myself, and other people work. A lot of places want to, you know, hip up their place or whatever, and they're like, oh, let's do a mural. So it's good in that sense, you know, as an artist. It's good to, you know, it's not a bad thing to bring money into the community.
Right.
I don't have any kind of problems with that. It's just the amount of, you know, just taking old places that's been there forever, forcing them out, forcing, you know, people that's lived here forever, forcing them out.
Yeah.
That's the only thing that really sucks about it. But, you know, it's, you know, the Beltline's nice and, you know, it's nice that there's, you know, new places to eat and stuff like that. And it's got its advantages and disadvantages. So I can't hate on it that much, but, you know, it's, and, you know, train's coming, you know, it's what it is.
Right. So, yeah. No, you're absolutely right about that.
Yeah. I'll make commentary about it and, you know, kind of state my stuff. But yeah, it's, you know, it is good for artists in some ways as far as getting us jobs and helping us, you know, pay our own bills to be able to stay here.
Right. Right. So. Speaking of jobs, you just completed two really big commissions, big in terms of the clientele that you were working with. And you, I know about them. I think you mentioned them on your Instagram, and you mentioned them in the little survey that I had sent you that you sent back to me. Mm. I don't know if you're comfortable mentioning the company's names on the podcast. If you are, we can talk about them.
One I can say, Pandora.
Yeah,
I can say that's done with. The other one, they have told me that I'm not supposed to talk about until the grand opening.
Gotcha.
But I'll say it's a big tech company.
Fair enough.
Big tech company is what they told me I'm allowed to say until after the grand opening. And that was after I posted all about it on my stories and stuff, and me and pictures in front of the signs and stuff. But that job was, both of those jobs was really cool. ABV actually hooked me up with the Pandora gig.
Okay.
Which was really cool.
Yeah.
Hillary hit me up and was just like, hey, do you want to do this job? And she sent me all the details about what they were doing, and it was really cool. They had me make a playlist of like 10 songs, and they made like a code and put it on the wall, and you know, the playlist is supposed to inspire the mural.
That's pretty cool. I wanted to talk about that. How difficult was it's a QR code that you scan on your phone, which yeah. brings up the playlist that you made.
Yeah.
Based on the piece.
Yeah.
How challenging was that part of it for you? Making a code that needed to be, you know,
they did all
usable.
They did all that for me.
Okay, so they yeah. give you a template and you just sprayed it onto the wall.
No, it's actually they took care of that.
Okay.
It's actually on like a piece of vinyl that's like adhered to the wall.
Oh, nice. Okay.
So I didn't have to paint it on there or anything, which that would be terrible trying to paint a QR code to work like that.
I was going
to
say, but, yeah.
I mean, Fleet Pantone did it. He did it like San Francisco, painted a massive QR code, which is pretty incredible. It just takes you to his website.
That's awesome.
But yeah, so on my end, it was really easy. They were just like, hey, just give us a list of 10 songs.
Yeah.
And I thought it was really interesting way to make the mural more interactive for people. And I thought that was really cool because everybody, you know, wants murals to be interactive now. They want,
sure,
you know, we want the butterfly wings, but not the butterfly wings, you know, come up with something super, super interactive and Instagrammable. I hate that word, but I hear it like on a weekly basis.
It's a factor, man. It's a factor to consider. I hate the word too, but literally in designing our art gallery, Free Market Gallery, we talked about what, if anything, can we offer that is Instagrammable?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like we need to create something in here that people will want to post to help us promote through that channel. You know, it's an unfortunate thing to.
Yeah.
You
know, I mean,
but it is what
nowadays,
it is.
It's business now. You gotta keep that in mind. You know, and I definitely keep it in mind when I'm painting murals and stuff and coming up with designs. You know, try to gear it to have things that people want to take pictures with. You know?
Right.
And you don't have to beat somebody over the head with something that's you know, like butterfly wings or something like that. A lot of times you can just put something on the wall and people will come up with their own cool ways to interact with it, which I like.
Yeah. I mean, I appreciate it. The interactive aspect is getting crazier and crazier the way that we are able to interact with artwork. I was listening to a radio story today about the rise of hologram technology and bringing back dead musical artists. And putting them back on tour.
Yeah, this is weird.
Frank Zappa and upcoming is Whitney Houston. And I just got to thinking, being in the line of work that I'm in and that you're in, how is that going to change art? How is that medium, how is technology going to change the way that we interact with visual arts?
I don't know. There's really no telling what people are going to come up with. And as soon as I feel like I've seen it all, and then you know you see somebody like Insane 51 do like a, you know, 3D piece where you put on 3D glasses and mm-hmm. it looks different. You know, mm-hmm.
like, you're talking about the couple facing each other.
He's done a bunch of them around okay. the world, but but the one I think he has one here like in East Atlanta that was for Outer Space Project, but the things people come up with. I mean, but more technology wise. You know, Lotus Eaters Club, you know, a lot of their stuff, you know, they have an app to where you know, the mural kind of, you know, comes to life when you look at it through the app and stuff, you know, augmented reality, which is pretty, you know, it's pretty cool to see in murals.
Yeah.
People always come up with something new. So.
I don't hate it. It's just, it blows my mind how quickly it's moving, you know, and artists who are producing are adapting to that. Well, I think.
Oh, yeah. Artists are going to be they're going to try to get ahead of the game before everybody be the first one to do things, because that's what's going to, you know, put somebody on the map, change their career.
Right. Exactly.
You never know.
How much with the commission pieces do you get creative freedom on? Obviously your style is why you are chosen to do the work and your talent and your skill, but how much of the, you know, how much of your signature actually goes into the design and creation of the piece?
And it's different for every job. Some I get complete total freedom. They're like, you know, just, you know, don't make it too offensive, you know, do whatever you want. So sometimes I get that, and then other times they're like, all right, this is exactly what I want. You know, I'm like, okay. And it just all really depends on the client. Sometimes they'll have a basic idea and then, you know, it'll take a few rounds of sketches to get to them, you know, to finally get something approved.
Right. Right.
But yeah, every job's different.
So let's talk about the Pandora job, for example. Was that, how much of Chris Veal original artwork went into that gig?
The Pandora one was actually a lot. They were, surprisingly easy to work with.
Okay.
A lot of times bigger companies are kind of a pain to work with, but Pandora was really, and also the tech company after that was, both of those, they were film sketches in like, just like maybe like two rounds. Pandora, I don't even think there was, I just sent them a sketch of that. And they were like, yeah, cool, great, do it. They just wanted it to have, you know, some kind of musical influence. So
the tech company, I've seen the piece. Yep. Maybe by the time this comes out, that'll be announced. You collaborated with Adam Podber.
I bring Adam on to a bunch of my jobs. Adam's great. We met on doing a job for a guy at Coca-Cola.
Mm.
And I didn't know Adam. The guy had subcontracted me and him to come and do the work for him.
Right, right.
We show up. And the guy's like, all right, cool. Here's the plans. There's the wall. Good luck. And the guy just left.
Hmm.
And we were like, the plans did not match the wall. Nothing was going good. And we stared at this thing forever. Because they had very specific, working for Coca-Cola, they're very specific. Everything has to be exactly to plan.
Oh, yeah. I bet.
Everything's got to be 100%. So we had to try to figure out how to fix it on the fly, and it was bad. We sat and we kind of stared at the wall for like 6 to 8 hours and tried to resketch stuff.
Right.
And it was really bad, and the guy just kind of left us, and we finally ended up figuring out how to make it work. Fixed all the guy's problems that he had, and he comes back and he's like, oh, okay, cool, all right, that's fine.
But
yeah, that's how I met Adam, and I think he worked on maybe a couple other jobs with me shortly after, one being the memorial wall, which was, it's 230 feet long.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's the biggest wall ever painted. And, you know, seeing Adam's attention to detail, he came out and he was like, I kind of turned around and he was like filling in the tiniest little holes with a brush.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, man, this wall is like 230 feet long. You don't have to do all that. Like, I appreciate the attention to detail, but we're gonna be here for like a year.
Right.
So I was like, back up and look at it.
Yeah.
I was like, the wall is so big, and he had like the smallest little brush filling in the tiniest little hole. So I was like, okay, this guy has a super good attention to detail. He paints really clean. It's great to hang out with when we paint. And his process as far as, order of operations and lining everything up, I don't have to worry about him with anything. So when I get big jobs, especially in the fall time, I'll bring him on.
Yeah.
And then that way, in the fall, the faster I get done with one job, the faster I can get on the next one. So it ends up helping me out a lot. And, he works full time he works with, Jeremy Brown.
Yep.
As well as doing his own art. So he stays really busy as well. But Adam's great.
Yeah, we've got a couple of Adam Podber originals in our gallery. And I want to get to collaboration in a second because you just mentioned a couple names which are relevant. But all I wanted to say to close that one out is the tech company piece looks really good.
Oh, thanks.
Not a small piece at all.
No.
Very much so your signature style.
Yeah,
included in there. I love it. Well done, and hopefully when it comes out, it'll be a huge hit. I'm sure it will.
Yeah, I hope so.
But
I hope the maybe some of the big wigs at this company will see it and want some more work.
Yeah, that's the dream.
Yeah, that job was great. It's in Covington, so it was a little bit of a hike. And on the last day, we actually drove down there, and we normally get there, put on like some true crime podcast, and just get to painting. But we got down there, and then I was like, oh man, Adam, I was like, you're gonna kill me, man. He's like, what? I was like, I left a can of paint back in Atlanta. So we had to immediately turn around, come back to Atlanta to get one can of spray paint, and then go back to finish the wall. So
oh,
we
ended up,
yeah, it was a rough one. But yeah, we got it done. I'm really excited about how it came out, and can't wait for everyone to see it and be able to actually talk more about it. I have posted it, but I can't just say who it's for or anything.
Sure. Yeah. So if you are checking out Caveal Caveal on Caveal on Instagram. You may see it, but it's a beautiful piece. Well done. But I wanted to get to collaborations and talking about you working with Adam. You've worked with studio and fine artists as well as with street artists throughout your career, it seems, as early on as the Inman Park Tiny Door ATL.
Way back when.
Yeah, with Karen, who's also been on this podcast, who Karen is great. To more recently, you did a collaboration with Jeremy Brown on a piece called Darkness Has Its Teachings, which is still available for sale at Free Market Gallery, which is a shameless self-plug there. But beautiful piece, which incorporates your pop Liechtenstein style of artwork with Jeremy's street fine resin heavy style of art, and a really beautiful piece.
But thanks.
You collaborate with artists all the time, from what I understand.
Yeah, when I can. Most of the time when I get to paint stuff for fun, you know, I will like bring people on and collab with them, or they'll hit me up. Jobs, I don't do as much collaborating. You know, most of the time I'll plan it out and I'll get Adam or somebody to help me if they have time. But yeah, when I do walls for fun, I do like to paint with my friends and paint, you know, with nails and, you know, matte letters and other, you know, people, and just, you know, when we can, it's a lot of fun.
Do your collaborations find, do you find that they're more on your murals and larger works, or more on studio pieces?
Murals mostly.
Okay.
Murals and graffiti stuff. I don't do a lot of collaborations on canvas work. Jeremy's one of the only people that I've done that with. And I've always loved Jeremy's work and really enjoy it. And I'd always seen Jeremy around, and we hadn't, you know, I'd talk to him at shows like, hey, what's up, man? You know,
right,
that was about the extent of our conversations. Like, hey, what's going on? Yeah. Other stuff. Yeah cool. And then, you know, my mom passed away in last year in December, year before last in December. And then, you know, fast forward months later, you know, Mother's Day rolled around, and, you know, Jeremy hit me up. He's like, hey, man, just want you to know I was thinking about you. And I was just
nice.
I was like, wow. Yeah. I was like, that's, and I was like, it's super, super cool, man. And I bumped into him at Adam's show, and I was just like, yeah, that was super cool of you to hit me up, you know. And we got to talk in there, and it's like, yeah, let's do a piece together. And so he did a, he did a piece with someone else, and I hit him up, and I was like, you know, after I saw that, I was like, yeah, let's really, you know, let's make this happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so he worked on the piece for a little bit, you know, all his work is in layers. So he did, he worked on a little bit, and he called me and was like, yeah, come get this canvas. So I went over and picked it up, brought it home, you know, did the girl's face, took it back to him. He did a little bit more, some more resin layers. And then I actually went to his spot over in the West End and painted the hand on a separate layer.
Nice.
So okay. give it a little depth. And then he stayed, I think he did maybe like three or four more layers after that. I mean, Jeremy's work's crazy, and it's a lot of work. What he has to do, like each piece, you know, every layer has to, you know, bake for, I don't know, maybe like 24 hours or something. And his pieces have like 7-8 layers.
They're not light. They are heavy pieces.
Oh yeah,
yeah. I mean,
and he does massive ones too. Like while I was there, he was doing one that was like so big. I was like, man. He's like, can you help me carry it? So I had to like help him carry it. And yeah, it's definitely not light work.
No, it was. I mean, we had to find a wall that had enough reinforcement and stud behind it just to hang the cleat that would go on, because it's so damn heavy. But yeah. Beautiful piece, man. Yeah, Jeremy's
Thanks.
Work. I've tried to get him on this podcast for a while, and he's not the most verbose guy. He doesn't talk all that much. So
yeah, I work a lot. Jeremy is up at like 5 o'clock in the morning every day, like hitting the gym, working nonstop. I mean, he's got a lot going on. Like I always feel like I work, you know, too much, and then I see him, I'm just like, man. Like, yeah, I'm like, that guy's up. I'm definitely not waking up at 5 o'clock and getting stuff done like he is. But yeah, Jeremy's a beast, man. He's not a lot of people in Atlanta have that work ethic, you know, that I've seen.
Yeah, and he's been able to stay fairly humble and level-headed, it seems, throughout the process, which is
he really is.
Cool.
He is super humble, laid-back guy, and he's really nice. And and his work is incredible. So yeah, it's really awesome to see Jeremy and everything that he's doing, you know, with his different shows and different pieces. You know, he's always working on something new.
Speaking of something new, you mentioned canvas work. Do you do your own canvas work, Chris Veal originals on canvas outside of, you know, your commissions and your large scale murals?
Yeah, I do. I've been actually trying to get together a show for a long time, and I've been working on pieces for it, but you know, then I get a call and it's like, hey, do you got any pieces available? I'm like, ah, yeah, check it out. I got these. I'm like, yeah. So I end up, it's a good problem to have, but I keep selling the pieces for the show that I've been planning forever.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
So I do get, I do work on my own pieces, you know, when I catch a moment. But it's definitely not as much as I'd like to.
Right. So. Right. Right. And you do prints as well. So yeah. you're selling a lot of prints these days, it seems. I walked past you in our shared hallway here when you were carrying a few out on multiple occasions. So
yeah, prints are great, and the place that I work at does printing, so
okay,
it's very easy for me to be like, oh, you know, put something up and be like, oh, got these prints, you know, and then I can just like run them myself and you know, make sure they look good and you know, ship them out from there. And so I'm nice. Really, really blessed and lucky to have that resource available.
Yeah.
Shout out PPR, 11th Street.
No, but, PPR is great. We've purchased from them
for
the gallery in the past. So
yeah, they're cool. Yeah. I can't bring myself to, you know, not work for them.
Yeah.
Because they're all really, really, you know, they're all really cool people. You know, I love all my coworkers. And yeah, I get, you know, it's a pretty laid back gig and go and shoot artwork and run printers and kind of hang out and be surrounded by, you know, other people's work as well as my own. So that's nice.
It's nice that places like PPR still exist.
Yeah.
You know, places that are selling that kind of equipment and, you know, a lot of secondhand camera equipment and shooting equipment and things like that. So
There's not a lot left. I mean, Showcase on Cheshire Bridge was a major one and they closed down just because I think the owners, you know, wanted to retire, and then no one really wanted to take the business because they got their hands in other stuff from what I hear, and doing good with that. So yeah, that's why that place closed. Wasn't like, I don't think it was like they, you know, couldn't hack it anymore or nothing like that. I think they're just,
well, that's good to know.
Wanted to close.
I had no idea. So that's good to know. I always have my questions about why Showcase closed, but I used to go there a lot. Really enjoyed that place. I literally just had a thought right on the top of my head, and I completely, completely spaced. Man. Damn, what was I talking about?
Jeremy Brown, place closing.
I'm just going to do a total 90-degree turn.
Okay.
I wanted to mention something that you put into your... put into something that I had either read or that you had sent me, which had to do with an April Fool's prank for In-N-Out Burger.
Oh yeah.
And I have no idea what the hell that is, but I was like, I can't leave this out of the conversation.
Yeah, that was, the April Fool's thing. I wanted to play a, you know, prank on Atlanta. I was like, all right, I want to do a prank, but I want to prank everybody. So I was like, what can I do? So I started brainstorming all these like stupid, ridiculous ideas. And I finally was like, well, I was like, what do we not have in Atlanta? I was like, that would everyone would like, you know, or that would trip everybody out. So it's like, I made a huge In-N-Out Burger coming soon sign.
Oh, nice.
And I took it to where Hattie B's is now, and in Little Five Points, and me and Matt Letters was out there at like midnight or 1 o'clock, like hanging this huge banner up. And, and that's another one of those things where I was just like, I don't know if anybody will, if anybody will get it or whatnot. And then I woke up the next day and like somebody was like, yo, go look at Reddit. And I went on Reddit and like somebody had posted and it had like hundreds of comments, and you know, everyone was just like, half the people were like, is this real? Is this real? You know, that people are like, nah, it can't be. And then I put the phone number. I was like, you know, call for applications, and I put Mike Jones's phone number. So people
that's
are like,
awesome.
Yeah, it's definitely a joke. I wish I would have put my name on that one too, but
that's really
funny.
Yeah,
I didn't do that. But yeah, I thought it was pretty good. I got some other stuff coming up this year that I think will be pretty good.
Good. I want to get to get to kind of what's coming down your pipeline, but I now remember what I was going to ask you before, which had to do with your style. We talked about collaborations. We talked about the Lichtenstein style of pop art that you've carried out through several pieces that you've done. But in reading up on you, one thing that I thought was really interesting that I wanted to touch on was the fact that you do not like doing the same style of work at all. And what you do, you always like to kind of mix it up and try new styles. What's the reasoning behind that? And how often would you say you mix up your style of work?
Well, I kind of bounce back and forth between different styles. And it's kind of based on my mood, you know, what I'm feeling at the time or what I want to get out, you know. Like I did I went to a festival in Tennessee and I saw Jex painting, doing like these ridiculous portraits. And I was like, I need to step my portrait, game up. And it's like, that looks really fun. So I started working on portraits a lot more this past year. And it's probably just boredom. Like I can't stand to do the same thing like all the time. Like I know some artists that literally do like the same picture, like
right.
Not even same style, same picture, same character, like, and that's all they do. And that just never really appealed to me. In the long run, it's probably not been the best as far as having people recognize, you know, that's Chris.
Yeah.
Because I've worked on, you know, hand painted signs. I've worked on, you know, realism, you know, all these different weird random things I just wanted to, you know, try out.
Right.
But now in the pop thing, you know, it's just supposed to be a one-off. It was supposed to be that one. And then I just started getting calls about it and like, oh, can, you know, what are you going to do next? And I was like, so I was like, maybe I'll do another one. So in Little Five, I did the one with, it's like a girl crying and said, my iPhone's dead.
Yeah.
So, and then after that, you know, seeing how it resonated with people, I was like, okay, yeah, people like it. I enjoy painting it. So I'll do more of these, but I'm always going to go back to painting letters under bridges and warehouses. I'm always going to try to work on portraits and realism. I'm always going to try these new things. To not get bored, not get stagnant, and just really enjoy just making art and getting to do new things is kind of my favorite part of it. You know, artists have the ability to reinvent themselves whenever they want to. They just got to go do something different, get out of their comfort zone. And that's what I really like the most, is just being out of my comfort zone. Like, that's what keeps it exciting. Like, oh, can I do this? I don't know if I can do this. And you try it and it looks messed up and you repaint it, you know, 10 times and you finally get it, you know, halfway workable. That's probably why I just mix up my styles, just boredom and just wanting to try new things and keep it fun.
Well, you've done a great job for people who do follow your work and who are picking up more on the Atlanta street art scene. Everything from, you know, your take on the scooters on the Beltline with the Alfred Hitchcock portrait that said the birds, which is a, you know, it's a famous Hitchcock film, but also a commentary on all of the bird scooters that are infiltrating.
A lot of those. They're getting rid of a lot of the companies. A lot of the companies are leaving Atlanta. So I think it will just be bird soon. But yeah.
I'm sure it has to die down at some point after accidents and.
I broke my wrist on one.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah, I was going down 10th Street and it was like super dark and I was leaving, you know, a bar and just riding out, and they had dug like a, you know, like Atlanta does, they dug a big trench in the sidewalk and no signs or nothing. I hit it and went flying into the street and car almost ran over me. I had to like swerve to not run over me.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And I bruised my rib, broke my wrist, and the guy whipped a U-turn, came back and he's like, yo, are you okay? And I was just like laughing, just like, God, this is so dumb. I was like, what did I do? But luckily it was my left wrist, so I was still able to paint as much, you know.
My right wrist. That's a. I don't know anything about it, but I hear, you know, can control is a real thing. And have you ever had a physical impediment on your spraying arm or spraying hand that you've been forced to adapt to or work around?
Only with my hand. When I first started, I was painting so much and I was also riding BMX a lot of the time, squeezing my brakes and stuff, that my whole finger went numb. So then it was numb for like a couple of weeks. I don't know if it was like nerve damage or what, but then I started painting with my thumb. And after that, I started like trying to learn how to paint a little bit with my left hand. But yeah, I've definitely had a lot of injuries, you know, from painting, you know, just climbing ladders, standing on ladders, just like nonstop and your foot being curled. I've had foot problems, painting one of the walls on Edgewood. I went snowblind painting it. Like,
oh damn.
And just from, cause the wall was white and I was just like out there on like the hottest day in July. And actually like after painting, my eyes hurt so bad. And I went into a grocery store. I was just like, dang, I can't see anything.
Damn.
I was like, I need to get out of here.
Yeah.
And I had to lay in bed for like a couple of days. So, I mean, yeah, no real stranger to injuries and getting hurt. And
it's a tough gig, man.
Yeah.
Especially in Atlanta in the summertime. Like, yeah. Jesus. Yeah.
Painting's very physical, too. I mean, that's what a lot of people get. Like, oh, yeah, you get to do what you love and paint murals all day. Like, yeah, I get to climb ladders and carry heavy buckets of paint. It really is a lot of work.
It's physical. It's
very physical.
Yeah, it's physical. One piece that I just have to comment on because I love is your Forward Warrior piece this year of Terry Kearns. famous Terry Kearns. If you, I don't know if it was your Instagram or somewhere else that had a picture of it with the caption, "If Terry didn't attend your art event, did it even happen?"
Yeah.
Which is so true. Terry is infamous in the art scene in Atlanta. Tell us who Terry Kearns is and why you decided to paint him.
Terry's, you know, you kind of summed it up. He's infamous in Atlanta. He puts so much at work into going to shows and supporting artists and stuff. So I was like, man, I got to paint this guy. And I was like, I really wanted, my goal was to paint a big portrait of him before he got there. And it started out as I was going to do like a realism portrait.
Right.
And I started, and I got done with like the eyes and the glasses, and I was just like, oh, this will take forever. So I was like, I'm going to switch it to pop art. And so I switched, like halfway through, I switched it to pop art because I can do it a lot faster.
Right.
And before I even got like remotely close to being done, he was one of the first people at the event. And,
of course
he was. Of course he was. You know? And I should have thought of that, but I really didn't. And he comes up, and he's like, is that anybody I know? And I was just like, yeah.
No.
I was like, I was hoping you wouldn't be here till later, but yeah, Terry's great. Super nice guy. I love running into him. And I just really wanted to give something back to somebody that gives so much of themselves to the art scene. So that's why I chose him. And yeah, Terry's the best. Cool guy.
I don't know him personally. Met him on a few occasions.
Oh, yeah.
Talked to him. And Terry, if you're listening, I want to have you on the podcast sometime. He's a guest I'd really like to talk to.
Oh, that'd be great. Yeah. But, I would love to get Terry's take on a lot of different things.
I feel like that's going to be a multi-part podcast.
Yeah. You
know, talk for a while. But
yeah, Terry's cool, man. He's a nice guy.
Yeah. I mean, he's just, you know, it's nice having someone like Terry who just is unapologetically in love with the art scene and will do, you know, we'll take so much of his personal time to go and support the scene. You know, it's fantastic.
Yeah, he really is there. And one of the things that really stuck out about Terry was I was at a show with him and it was like dying down. There wasn't a lot of people there. And he was just sitting there just taking everything in, going to each piece and staring at it for a while. And then I got to talking to him and he was just like, man, he's like, I really love this stuff. He's like, I really do. I was just like, yeah, I know you do. I know you do. I was like, man, it means so much to the artist. And it's great to see him out. And he does put in a lot of work. And I'm really thankful for that, to have people like that and that really support us. You know, it really does mean the world. And it's awesome. Because without them, we're, you know, artists ain't really much without their fan base. You know what I mean? Like, totally, people that enjoy the work, you know, like, it's how I make a living. It's, you know, it's like, so I'm super thankful for people that really take it in and enjoy it and get as much out of it as we do making it.
Yeah. I mean, what is art without a community who appreciates art and who wants to buy art and supports artists? So, you know, it's great having people like Terry out there looking out for not only the artists, but making the community better for everyone who's involved in the art scene. So, you know, Terry, come on the show sometime. So, Chris, before we wrap up for the show, do you have any final thoughts or any advice you'd like to give to any artists who are starting out or who are trying to get their foothold in this business from your perspective?
Yeah, the main thing is just work extremely hard, like, at it. There's, you know, a lot of people want to be artists. You know, a lot of people, you know, they see the, you know, the idea of working for yourself, and, you know, it's super appealing to a lot of people. And do it for the right reasons. Do it because you enjoy the art. You know, you love making it and you love creating it for people. So do it for the right reasons, and definitely just really, really work hard at it, because it's a lot of work. You know, it's not you don't just dive into being an artist overnight. You know, you really have to put in a lot to it. So yeah, that, and you know, getting into art, you're gonna have haters. You're gonna have people that, like, are super negative and say bad things. Just try to make the good stuff outweigh the bad. You know, it takes a lot to build you up, but it only takes like one negative comment and your whole day is ruined. So just keep, you know, for anyone starting out, keep in perspective that, you know, there's a lot of good, but, you know, there's going to be, you know, people, you know, it's going to be bad stuff and people, jealous people and whatnot. So, you know, if you get bad comments, don't even worry about them. I used to get bad comments a lot more, you know, a lot, all the time. So just keep going, keep at it. And yeah, that's about it for that. Definitely want to say thanks to everyone. You know, thanks for enjoying my pieces, sharing my pieces, liking my pieces, you know, tagging friends, you know, things that a lot of people do that it really, you know, helps out artists a lot, just sharing the work. So I'm super thankful for people like that. And people that get out and take pictures and stuff, it makes being an artist, you know, a lot of fun for me to see what other people do as far as, you know, shooting the pieces and stuff. So that's great. And yeah, and thanks to everybody that supports me in art, and, you know, Six Feathers Clothing, Sam Flax for everything I'll do, for helping me out with paint, ABV, Ford Warrior, you know, everybody, all the galleries that, you know, spend their time and throw shows, everyone that, you know, supports artists. Thanks. You know, it's great.
Yeah. Well, thank you for the work that you do. And again, thank you to everyone in the community. I mean, we mentioned several people throughout the show, and the people you just mentioned, definitely a community effort in uplifting Atlanta artists and the Atlanta art community. So,
oh yeah, and Lionheart Framing for making my stencils for the Ben Day dots. Yeah, that's I couldn't do it without them. So Lionheart, big shout out to Alton, all the guys over there. They're great guys, and all the dots that I do, they custom make all the stencils. So yeah, can't forget them.
Yeah, that's a pretty critical component.
Yeah, when you're doing pop art, yeah, if you want to do the dot pattern, yeah, that's how I'll do it.
Sweet. Well, Chris,
don't forget them.
Before we wrap up, where can people find you online, social media, whatever? Where can they keep up with you and see what you're working on?
Instagram's going to be the best place. You know, at CAville. That, you know, you can find me on Facebook too, but I don't post very much on there. So just Instagram. Don't have a website. Maybe I'll make one this year sometime if I get time. But yeah, that's about it. Yeah, just Instagram and out in the streets, you know, get out and find the work.
Sweet. Well, Chris Veal, artist, muralist, PPR employee extraordinaire, Atlantan, someone who's been very involved in contributing to and shaping the Atlanta art scene. Also my next door neighbor, who it's, you know, been a long time coming for you to be on the show. So thank you so much for coming by. It's been my pleasure. Again, you can find Chris at CAVEAL on Instagram. And Chris Veal, thank you so much for coming by.
Yeah, thanks for having me. We'll be right back.